Amen. Thank you, Vic. Good morning, everybody. My name's Matt. I've got the privilege of being part of the leadership here at Maybridge. How did you get on with that discussion question about how you'd spend £1 million? Anyone got a few ideas? Anyone want to shout anything out?
Crypto.
Aston Martin. Someone shouted crypto. Anything else?
Charity.
A cruise. Okay, so we're beginning a new series today for about 6 weeks called Healthy Household. And the idea behind this is we follow Jesus. That's what church is about. That's what it's here for. We believe that he's God come to earth, who died and then miraculously rose again to reconcile us to God. And that's central. It's the wonderful central event of history. But also, because Jesus is God, it's worth listening to what he says about everything. In fact, it's worth hanging off his every word. And so in this series, we're going to think practically about what following him looks like in some different key areas of life. But the reason we called it Healthy Household is that as a church, we're a family, we're a big family, and we want to work these things out together. We've all got different strengths and weaknesses, and we can support one another and help each other. Today, we're kicking this off talking about, drumroll, money. Although Jason gave a spoiler early, didn't he? Yes, money. Now, I know that sometimes there's a perception. You might be somebody who's relatively new to church. Sometimes there's a perception that churches talk about money all the time. Isn't there? People kind of think that. I don't know what happens elsewhere, but at Maybridge, we tend to talk about money really about once a year on average. And actually, that's not enough. In ratio to how much Jesus talks about money, we don't talk about it enough at Maybridge. So you can expect that that maybe is going to change. This series, as I said, it's 6 weeks. We're going to begin and end with money. It will end talking about generosity. But today we're stepping back from that and talking about something, stewarding money. We're going to talk about stewarding money. You see, God is not just after you and I giving away all of our money to charitable causes. It's more. There's more to it than that. He wants us to steward 100% of our money really well, to take responsibility and use it in good, sensible, intelligent ways. Now, in the time that Jesus taught on money, and he said a lot, there were basically two views on wealth at the time. And the first was non-ownership. So, and you see this in Greek philosophy, for example, if you read Plato's stuff, which I'm sure we're all doing on a normal week. Plato had this idea of a utopian society where rulers own nothing and the resources belong to society as a whole. There's echoes of that in Marxism more recently. But the other basic view of money was not non-ownership, it was ownership. And this was the Roman view. You had absolute authority over your property. If you've got a barn, you can burn down your barn because it's your barn. And this is closer to the view of the modern Western society that we're in now. But the view that comes to us through Jesus is a radically different way from either of those. Not the way of ownership or non-ownership, but stewardship. God is the owner and we are the manager of his stuff. Our money is all God's. And this is great news in lots of ways. In these times that we're in, given the cost of living increase in recent years, would anyone in this room not benefit from growing in how we make good decisions about stewarding money and inviting God to help us to do it? Now, there are many verses of the Bible that are either directly or indirectly about money, and they're less about getting us to grudgingly throw our cash to good causes. It's more about how we make intelligent decisions in light of all of that money being God's. Just going to start with one of those stories. So this is a stewarding story. This is Luke 16, eyewitness account of Jesus' life. So I'm just going to share this story Jesus tells and then sort of widen it out and talk about stewarding money more generally. But here's this story Jesus tells, and it's a weird one. Here's what it says. Jesus told his disciples, "There was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management because you cannot be manager any longer.' The manager said to himself, 'What shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig. I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses.' So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, "How much do you owe my master?" 900 gallons of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, "Take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 450. Then he asked the second, "And how much do you owe?" 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replied. He told him, "Take your bill and make it 800. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. "For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light." Now, he's going to say more, but just to pause on this for a moment. So far, it looks like Jesus is saying, hey, you should be like this dishonest manager character I came up with. That would be great. How could Jesus, of all people, tell us to be like this? In virtually, if you read all of Jesus' parables, in virtually all of them, what's showcased, what's elevated, is good character. That's the thing that he said, no, you should have good character. Not here. Jesus chooses to tell a parable that he came up with where an unethical man is shrewd. Now, why tell it this way? Why not make him nice as well as shrewd? It's intentionally shocking. Jesus wants to unsettle our assumptions about money and stewardship to get our attention. He's not praising the man's ethics, but he is praising his wisdom about how real life works. Look at that key line at the end. The people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than other people of the light. He's saying in his own way, people who don't follow him, people who don't follow Jesus, are often more realistic and more savvy about using money in this life than Christians are. They're more savvy than Christians are about what good stewardship can do with money, both in this life and for the life that Jesus promises is to come. In other words, people who are not Christians, people who are not, are generally better, according to Jesus, at taking advantage of the way the world works for their own good than Christians are. And that's not really surprising if you think about it. If money is a higher priority for you than Jesus, which, let's be honest, for many people it is, you are likely to be more proficient at making money for yourself. You'll put more thought into it, more energy into it, and you'll make more of it, most likely, not always. But I don't think Jesus is saying this to compliment his followers. Many Christians say that they believe in what Jesus says, say that they believe in eternal life, but if you looked at their bank account, they often manage money as though this life is all there is. And that's at the root of Jesus' challenge in this passage. He's not pushing people who don't follow him and saying, come on, be more moral or anything like that. He's pushing people who say that they do, who say that they follow Jesus, but that's not necessarily evident in how they use money. Here's how he applies it. He says, I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves so that when it's gone, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you've not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? No one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Jesus doesn't say, hey, you know, be like this dishonest manager, make him your role model. But he does say, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself. Did anybody expect Jesus to say that either? Use wealth to gain friends for yourself. Doesn't that sound a bit sinister and manipulative? The idea is not about buying friendships, like going down the street, like, I'll give you £100 if you be my friend. It's about using your money in such a way that you are in favor with other people. Think about it like this. If you're the sort of person, as you go about life, who is not stingy, and you take responsibility for things, and you don't sponge off other people, and you pay your bills on time, if you're like that, one outcome will be that it's good for your relationships, won't it? Stewarding money well will help you with your relationships. And the logic behind this is simple. Money is temporary. People are eternal. Therefore, money should be used to serve people, not the other way around. This is saying invest in people, invest in God's kingdom, the thing that's on his agenda. And if money is just a tool for you and not your God, you will use it for good and to create community and to be good friends and to impact the world and positively in your friendships and relationships, and not use money to get your identity and your security. This is not about funding your ticket to a heavenly afterlife. It's about living in continuity with what Jesus has already done right now and forevermore. You could say this is about being better than the dishonest manager, not the same. If God's people prove themselves trustworthy in stewarding money, he gives them more to look after. He gives them more responsibility, not for worldly wealth, but for what Jesus calls true riches, the riches that God gives that are of greater worth than money, the things that last forever. All money does is reveal the heart. If you're dishonest with a little, you will be dishonest with a lot. If you're trustworthy with a little, you'll be trustworthy with a lot. It's not the amount of money that tells the story. It's your character. Think about it like this. The shrewd manager in the story has some success with his clever strategy. But would anybody have ever trusted him with their money ever again? No. That's a card you can only play once, what he's doing. It's a short-term plan based on the mess that he's in and how he's lived his life. Imagine if the story had been different and he'd acted with integrity and his master had been able to trust him in the first place. How much better off would he be in the long run, not only financially, but in his relationships? And so God wants us to be shrewd and to steward money well and see all of it as something that we manage on his behalf. But how do we do it in practice? Drilling into wisdom about money is hard because none of us are in the same financial situation, are we? We've all got different things going on. But we can all be wise about it. And so here are five pointers I want to talk to you about. And it's really up to you whether you do anything about this, because nobody's going to know what you do with your money unless you talk about it, except God. He will know. Here we go, though. Five things. First one. On stewarding money, know what you've been given to use. Know what you've got. Our daughter Anita is 11, and she's grown up quickly, and she's really good with maths. She's very good with maths, does well at maths at school. But we've found that's not the same thing as understanding the value of money for a child. They've got to learn a different thing. And I remember a few years ago, and we went to a museum on a family trip. And we got to the end, and guess what? We were faced with the dreaded gift shop. And these places are designed so you can't leave without going through the gift shop. It should be illegal. Honestly, one time, a different time, we were at a museum, and we dropped Anita over a wall and then walked around. One of us caught her on the other side, but so that we didn't have to take her through the gift shop, because we just thought, oh, that's just awful. It's very effective. That's a little tip, not to do with money. But if you've got a small child, just over the wall, as long as it's not too high. Anyway, on this occasion, as soon as we went into this gift shop, she immediately wanted all of the shiny, overpriced plastic tat that was on display. But this time, because we've been talking about money, we said, okay, you can have whatever you like up to a certain point, but it has to come out of your pocket money that we gave you last week. We're not paying for anything. You've got to pay for it. And you could just see there was a moment when it clicked. Ah, I've got to pay for it. That could change things. Anyway, 5 minutes later, she went off. 5 minutes later, she came back holding a pink rock. Daddy, I want this. It's amazing. I will play with it all the time. Oh, really? It looks to me like a pink rock. Yes, it is. And it's wonderful. I think if you buy that, it's going to sit on the shelf forever. But I love it. Okay, it's up to you. It's £3. It's your decision. But I want you to take your time. Look at some other stuff in this shop. Come back. Tell me what you're going to do. And I'm glad to say, in the end, she didn't buy the pink rock. She bought a little telescope, which was much better. She had to steward what she had, but it helped her to know how much money she had to play with. And it seems so basic, but simply knowing what you've been given is the place to begin. How much money have you got to steward right now? How many people, put your hand up, know approximately what's in your bank account? I'm impressed. I know you don't, darling. But I do. Do you know what your monthly income is? You know, some of us, that's easier to judge than others, depending on your employment. It's good to know what you've got. And I'm impressed at how many people put their hand up. And, you know, things can change, salary, benefits, and so on. In our house, it's very simple. I get paid once a month. Naomi gets paid once a month. We get child benefit payments once a month. Those are our incomes. We know exactly what they add up to, or I do. The total amount of that is what God has given us to steward every month. Not 10% of that, not 50% of that. All of that is what we have to steward. And so that's the start, knowing what God has actually given you to steward in this moment in time. If you don't know, find out. Secondly, honestly assess the reality of your heart. This is the hardest bit. The author Tim Keller once said, "Money flows effortlessly to that which is its God." Money flows effortlessly to that which is its God. No spreadsheet or plan can deal with the heart on this. And nobody can tell you what your heart is. It's between you and God. Like Jesus said, you can't serve both God and money. If you're really honest, where does money potentially have a hold on you? If you're thinking, I'm not really sure, here's some suggestions. Does money control you, or do you control money? Some of the outward signs of money being a problem for you might be these. It might be overspending. Just spending more money than you have, I'll pay it for a credit on a credit card down the line, it'll be fine. Spending more than you have could be a problem. Showing off could be a problem. Like, I've got to have the newest car and the nicest clothes, or, you know, whatever, the Instagram life, I've got to do all that. It could be hoarding money, and nobody might know, but you might be sat on lots of money and thinking, well, this is my safety. If I don't have this, I'll be in trouble. I'm going to hoard money. I won't spend anything. I've got to have it all there just in case. It could be fraud or theft, which are obviously bad. It could be freeloading. You just let other people pay for stuff for you all the time. You never get the bill. It's always somebody else. Or it could be things like get-rich-quick schemes or gambling, things that promise, right, for no effort, loads of money will come to you right now. And you think, oh, that sounds really good, but it becomes a problem for you. Those are outward. But there can also be inward signs that money is a problem for you. It could be avoidance. Like, you just don't open the bit of post that you know is a bill. I'm just not going to look at it, and then it'll go away. I'm not going to talk about it. It could be stinginess, that you're just never generous to anybody else. It could be anxiety. Like, you're not telling anybody, but you're stressed. You're having sleepless nights about money. It's just getting to you and bothering you, and maybe for some good practical reasons. It could be jealousy. The person next door has all these nice toys and trinkets and things. You think, oh, I wish I had all of that. If only I had more money. Or the opposite, it could be superiority, that you've got nice things and you look at your neighbor and think, well, they don't have it. I guess I'm just better than them. We don't like to admit it, but that's the thing that goes through people's heads. Or it could be a sensitivity, like nobody can talk to you about money. You're too sensitive. You won't go there. Even close friends, you know, no, brick wall, because you don't want to talk about money. Any of these things could be signs that for you, money is a problem. There are lots of ways money can control us. I would bet that every single person in this room has experienced some of these things. Come and tell me at the end if it's not you. I'd love to meet you. But while the belief that safety and happiness is found in money is widespread, hardly anybody thinks that it's a problem for them. We talk a lot, you know, oh, our society's so materialistic. Oh, look at, you know, Elon Musk with all his money, blah, 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 these terrible people. It's never our problem. It's always somebody else's problem. We need to face the possibility that we each idolize money more than we would like to admit. It's certainly something to invite God into. One of the Proverbs, 21 verse 2, says, "A person may think their own ways are right, but the Lord weighs the heart." Left to our own devices, the heart will justify all sorts. How much of the time that you pray or talk about your faith with other people includes your use of money? How often does that happen? Third big point, have a comprehensive, carefully considered plan. When it comes down to it, I think there's basically six things you can possibly do with money, and it's these. You can save it, you can spend it, you can gamble it, you can give it, you can invest it, or you can neglect it. That's all you can do with it, those six things. Some of those are better than others. But if you don't have some sort of plan for your money, it will disappear. It will just disappear if you've not got a plan. It just will. Now, I'm not a natural at this, but the very simple act of having a plan can make a huge difference. Another proverb, 21 verse 5, says, "The plans of the diligent lead to profit, as surely as haste leads to poverty." It's unglamorous and it may seem dull, but planning pays off. Just like looking at your outgoings, maybe looking at your bank statements over a few months and saying, what do I actually spend money on? Not what do I think I spend it on, what do I actually spend it on? Where does it go? And am I happy with what's happening? You may find some surprises. Look, I spend £500 a month on toilet tissue. That's strange. I don't, by the way. But, who knows what you'll find out. One thing within this that's really, it's really helpful to be clear, to be able to distinguish what you want and what you need. When you go through what you use money on, clearly some stuff you need. You need food and you need shelter and you need water. But some things you may not need, but you've got a strong case for, like a car or a washing machine. Other things you do not need, like a TV or a great holiday or jewelry. You don't need those things. But even out of the things that you need or have a strong case for, you don't need the most expensive version. No, nobody needs a brand new car or to buy all their food from Waitrose. So you can spend money on what you need. And I'm not saying don't spend any money at all on stuff that you only want. Spending stuff, money on stuff you want isn't all bad. That's fine. I'm saying, do you know the difference? And do you have an idea of where your money is actually going in ratio? At the back of the church, you'll find there's an A4 colourful thing that we made a year ago about generosity and giving. But in the back, there is a page that's just a very simple spreadsheet for budgeting. You're welcome to take that. It might be really helpful. It could be exactly what you need to do right now. If you don't get practical with managing your money, it's like doing it with a blindfold on. It's better to manage it strategically and not sentimentally. Find out the reality of where it's going. Fourth thing, be accountable to someone sensible who is good with money. I would imagine most of us would rather not do this. Most people in our culture do not enjoy talking about money. It's too personal, we're too English. You might be my good friend, but I can't tell you any details of my actual life and where my money goes. Why would I do that? And of course, no two of us, like we said, are in the same situation. But we can still help each other. As Proverbs 12 says, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice." Can we make it okay for each other to talk about money in the right context and benefit from the perspective of somebody else? According to Christians Against Poverty, a charity that helps people who are in debt, the average person who gets into debt struggles for 2 years before they tell anybody. 2 years. Wouldn't it be much better if we shared the reality and got support earlier, not least because then the debt isn't as big? I know we might feel embarrassed to talk about money, but as a church, we're extended family. We need to grow a culture where it's okay to talk about money. And there are people at this church who are good at this, who can be confidential, who'd love to help you. So do come and ask me and I can connect you with people. And if you need that, just somebody, there's no shame in this whatsoever. Okay, if you need help budgeting, managing money, there is help available. If you were thinking of a huge financial decision like buying a house or a car or a big holiday, would you discuss it with people you know or would you just do it? If money is a potential master in our lives, would we not be better off opening ourselves up to the input of other people? I recently met up with a friend who is great with money, and beforehand I updated a family spreadsheet we have that as accurately as possible goes through everything that we spend every month. And I put it in front of this friend and I asked him to be as honest as possible for my own good about what he thought about our spending habits. And it was super helpful. Would you be comfortable doing that? Even if you wouldn't, would it still be wise to do that? Would it be a good idea? You've got to pick the right person. And it might not solve every financial challenge, but I do recommend it. I do think it's worth doing. Fifth and final point, depend on God in ways that mean that he will have to show up or you're in trouble. You can do all the other things I've listed in kind of a mechanical way. In fact, you don't even need to be a Christian to do those other things. But the heart of a good relationship with money is to depend on God for our needs. This isn't airy-fairy. It doesn't mean abdicating responsibility. Depending on God means we try to manage what he's given us as best as we can, and we entrust to him the result of doing it. Because doing it God's way does not always immediately feel good, but it is always a good move. Here's a few examples of what I mean by this. With money, maybe because you trust God, you choose to spend less on entertainment and believe that because God is sufficient, this will not leave you bored or joyless. It could be that because you trust God, you choose to be more open with good friends about money, believing that he will use wise people for your growth. It could be that because you trust God, you choose to give a gift from your savings account anonymously to someone who's struggling and believe that God will make sure that you have enough when you need it. All these are examples of people trusting God with money that I've seen people do, that I've known people have done. But while it can look very different in all our circumstances, the underlying idea is it's God that's trusted, not the money. And if he's not real, he won't come through. But if he is, he will. And time and again, I've seen God provide for me and other people when we've chosen to do things his way. Trusting God with your money is a great way to end up with stories that tell about how he's provided for you. And it's a great way to really grow your faith. As a church, we're a community of people with all sorts of money situations. Some of us are more well off, some of us are not so well off, but we can all grow, all of us, in stewarding what we have. And in the cultural moment we're in, it's great to do things God's way and demonstrate that it works, that it's healthy. If we're surrounded by people who are stressed about money and who understandably hoard and panic and get very anxious, we can serve the wider world by living differently with money. Imagine this. Imagine if we as God's people can depend on him to meet our needs and steward our money so well and be free from the control of money so much that we become a stabilizing, life-giving, joy-bringing presence to our community, whether we're rich or poor personally at all. Let me just close by going back to Jesus' last words in the passage. No one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. With everything Jesus says about money and stewardship, he boils it down to this stark choice. It's God or money. And given that Jesus' main claim is that he's God come to earth, this is really him saying, it's money or me. It's money or me. Which, by the way, does not fit with the sort of semi-popular idea that Jesus is just a cuddly moral teacher. Cuddly moral teachers don't say, worship money or worship me. But it provokes a question. Why would you choose him? Why would you choose him? It's all very well to have practical thoughts on how to steward money in the way of Jesus. Why would you choose to worship Jesus over money? After all, money looks great. Rich people look like they're happily enjoying money. Money can get you fun experiences. It can get you a comfortable lifestyle. It can get you a feeling of security. Why not sign your life over to Mammon, the god of money? Because it's a fraud. In the end, money, like every false god, eventually demands that you sacrifice for it, that you work for it, that you strive for it, you surrender things for it. And at every stage, money will promise more and more and ask more and more from you. And then at the exact moment that you die, it will be utterly useless to you, completely useless. All good financial advisors think long term. And following Jesus is exactly that, because he reverses the demand. Money asks you to sacrifice for it, to die for it, but he sacrificed for you. He died for you, and he's trustworthy. So serve him as the master. Steward things in his ways. It's the best, wisest, greatest financial investment and advice you could ever have. If you want any more help on this, we're going to run a stewarding money workshop. You may have done things like this before, you may not have, but I'd recommend this. Again, it doesn't matter whether you're really well off, well paid, etc., or not. Everybody can benefit from stewarding money well. This workshop's on the 25th of February, week on Wednesday, 7:45 to 9 in this building. Why not come along and work out how to steward your money in the way of Jesus so that it serves him and you serve him, not that you serve money? He's much better. Shall we stand and worship?